I'm going to call this meeting to order. We need one more member for a quorum, but what we can do is we can start with testimony. So is Representative Tice here? Welcome, Representative Tice. We're going to wait to move the bill, but if you'd like to go ahead with your testimony.
I will. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today we are presenting House File 2281, and what the bill does, and it's very straightforward, it takes one credit of business management strategies as one of the 14 required credits for residential contractor's license.
Our mics aren't working right now.
Okay.
We'll start this again.
Start from the beginning.
Okay, I'm going to call this meeting to order. We do not have a quorum yet, but we will invite Representative Tice to give testimony on her bill. So welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 2281 is a pretty straightforward bill. What we're going to do is include one credit of business management strategies as one of the 14 required credits for residential contractors continuing education. Builders need to take 14 credits every 2 years to maintain their business license. This bill does not increase the number of hours required. What it does is takes one of the credit hours and make sure it has to be with business management strategies. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to one of my testifiers.
My name is Terry Hammett. Thank you for listening to me, Madam Chair and members. I'm a general contractor, been in business for about 27 years. And when I started in business, I was two guys in a pickup truck. Actually, we had two trucks. We were pretty big. So our business almost failed in the first few years due to the fact that we didn't know where we were in business. We were great carpenters, terrible businessmen. And so over the years, we made it through and we succeeded. And I really did not get a good education in what I was doing until I became members of the Builders Association. And through the educational opportunities there, we actually developed our company a lot better. So the idea of having, and then the other thing is you're busy all the time. So you're busy, you don't have enough education. So if one of the required credits for your contractor licenses was to deal with business strategies and you had to take that class every 2 years, I think that would be a huge benefit to contractors in general. And it would help a lot of us that were just starting out, stay in business, and better serve the public. And one side note, the majority of claims against the contractor recovery fund are contractors that have gone out of business for one reason or another. And so that would help eliminate a lot of that, too.
Thank you. And so now that we have a quorum, I'd like to officially move House File 2281, and it will be referred to Ways and Means. And I understand you have an author's amendment?
I do.
Would you like to explain the amendment at all?
The amendment basically is changing the language, or on line 10, it's changing financial to business.
Any questions? All those in favor of the I'd like to move the A19-0289 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails. Now that we have the bill that you in the shape you'd like it in, would you like to continue with the other testifier?
Yes, I also have Tom
Gavaris
with me, too.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, and Representative Tice. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm Tom Gavaris. I'm the Education and Special Programs Manager for Housing First Minnesota. Housing First Minnesota is a trade association with around 1,100 members that are builders, remodelers, and associate companies. I manage a program at Contractor University called the Builders Association called Contractor University at Housing First Minnesota. It's one of the larger continuing education providers for Minnesota contractors, remodelers, and roofers. A contractor university provides both classroom and online continuing education training. In addition to Minnesota contractors, a contractor university provides training for Minnesota building officials, Minnesota realtors, and Wisconsin contractors. In our recent series of classes, we had about 25 classes, about 20 instructors that taught in our classroom. Contractor University is also accredited by the International Association of Continuing Education Training, which is a very prestigious designation. Housing First Minnesota is pleased to support this bill, and including the requirement that the specification that the 1 hour of training that would fall within the 14 hours of the total training needed for continuing education. There are a number of subject matters that can be included in this type of training, ranging from understanding financial statements, establishing and tracking a budget, payments to subcontractors, measuring and improving efficiency, aligning performance measures with business strategy, and measuring performances. We have long at Housing First Minnesota believed that business management training would be beneficial to contractors, their customers, and also to the residential construction industry. Training of this type has not been permitted or allowed for contractor continuing education in the past. So we're glad to see the introduction of this bill and are glad to offer our support. Thank you.
Representative Tice?
If there's any questions,
are there any,
certainly happy to answer.
Representative
Meekland. Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually support this bill. I like this bill. The only thing I would say is, so you have 1 hour per 14 credits, which would be 1 hour every other year, correct?
Correct.
If there's anything I could suggest, I think it should be 1 hour every year, because I think it's a very important thing, and so much moves and changes quickly that it's a lot to cover within business, and we know the regulations change frequently, so I think it would be better if it's something you would like to change later as it moves through, but I do fully support this. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. Would you be allowed to take classes, let's say business classes at a community college, and would that apply to the continuing education credits? Or how exactly would that work?
Only if the community college was a sponsor through the Department of Labor and Industry, and that specific course had been applied for with Department of Labor and approved for continuing education. So we would need to go through the process through Department of Labor and Industry before, but it can be offered by any sponsor provider as long as, again, they're a confirmed Department of Labor sponsor and then the course has gone through the application process.
Great.
I probably, through Contract University, have probably submitted about 150 courses through Department of Labor, and they have a great staff there that manages that.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 2281 be referred to Ways and Means as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you.
You very much.
Do the minutes.
We have some minutes that we would need to move. There's two sets of minutes. So can I get somebody to move the March 13 minutes?
Move.
Representative Eklund, thank you. Is there any questions on the? So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Mm-hmm. Motion prevails.
Yes.
And then we also have the March 20th. Minutes. Would somebody be willing to move the March 20th minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson, thank you. All those in any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion prevails. Right. So, Representative Eklund, you're pitch hitting for Representative Mahoney here?
Nice. Very appropriate for this bill.
It is appropriate.
That was
Madam Chair, he's the designated hitter.
Don't try to throw him a curveball.
We are in spring training here, so. Representative Eklund, would you like to move the bill?
I'd like to move the bill, Madam Chair. I don't know where it's going. Is it for late, possible late over?
We're actually referring to Ways and Means.
Okay, I'd like to move the bill to be referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you. And if you'd like to present the bill.
I will, Madam Chair. This is a bill that I'm pinch hitting for Representative Mahoney, and I'll turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thanks very much, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Whaley. I'm the Executive Vice President and a part owner in the St. Paul Saints Baseball Club. The bill before you today would amend Minnesota Statute Section 177.23, Subdivision 7, to add minor league baseball players employed on a seasonal basis and playing under a contract to the list of individuals exempt from state minimum wage and overtime provisions. I would like to point out that during the last year, similar exemptions have been applied to this particular class of individuals, have been enacted at the federal level with United States Congress, and then also at the municipal level with the City of St. Paul. I can explain in a few minutes about both of those. The purpose of House File 2543, I think I have the number correct, yep, is to bring Minnesota law into alignment with federal labor law and city ordinance in St. Paul. The Saints in our league, the American Association, operate independently of and are not subsidized in any way by Major League Baseball. The league's comprised of 12 teams that operate in 10 different states and a Canadian province. Last year, following the enactment of the federal legislation, which is informally known as the Save America's Pastime Act, our league, the American Association, immediately adopted the federal standard as a league rule regarding player compensation. All teams in our league operate under a compensation system that sets a salary cap for team payrolls. The system has been in place since the league's inception, and it allows us to maintain competitive balance on the field of play among all the teams, regardless of market size, relative market size, and relative financial strength. In fact, this has been the case. The team in Sioux City, Iowa, which draws about 1,000 fans per game, is one of the stronger teams in the league, largely because of the system that's in place regarding player compensation. A team like St. Paul or Winnipeg is not able to spend, that may draw more than that, is not able to spend whatever it wants on players to try to win. The league rules are strictly enforced, and I believe you may have a letter in your materials from our executive director. And the sanctions imposed by the league for violations of any of its rules, but in particular the salary cap rules, would range anywhere from fines to exclusion from postseason play to expulsion from the league, ultimately. I would like to also note that in 2017, the state of Illinois, which is home to several independent minor league baseball teams like the Saints, amended its labor laws to remove from the definition of employee minor league baseball players employed by independent teams. I should note as well that the and I apologize, I sound like I'm reading a lot, and normally I don't like to do that, but more than that, I don't like to forget anything, so I would like to remember everything. All of our players negotiate and sign uniform league-approved contracts, and that set wages based on relative skill and experience. It should be pointed out that the tracking of the hours of a minor league baseball player or any professional athlete attempting to work their way from the amateur ranks through the minor leagues up to the major leagues, which is their ultimate goal, they don't count their hours when they're doing it, and it's fairly unprecedented to assert, as the lawsuits did. I'll talk about that next. There were two lawsuits filed in 2014 and 15. It's unprecedented to have hours tracked. It's never been done before. It had been settled law and policy in this country that professional athletes were not paid hourly. In 2014 and 15, there were federal class action lawsuits filed by former minor league baseball players on behalf of current and former minor league baseball players, alleging that they should be paid by the hour and should be paid minimum wage and should receive overtime As you might imagine, that upset the industry somewhat, concerned them and confused them, and which resulted in an effort with the Congress to clarify what had been understood for a very long time, that minor league professional athletes were not paid by the hour. I would like to point out that following the enactment of the federal law, as some of you may know, the city of St. Paul undertook a discussion regarding a $15 minimum wage in the city. We were part of those discussions, met with the mayor and city council and other city officials, relayed our situation to them, particularly with regard to the rules regarding player compensation, and they were persuaded that the only way to deal with the situation was to provide an exemption for the team from the $15 an hour minimum wage. And so we have an exemption from overtime at the state level. There's an exemption at the city level from $15 minimum wage, and that's to my point earlier about attempting to align Minnesota law with law and practice at the federal level and the municipal level as well. That's what the bill is about. I'll just for the sake of brevity, I'll just leave you with a couple of thoughts that in and of themselves may not be dispositive of the issue. There are not a lot of things in life, love, and politics where Mayor Melvin Carter and President Donald Trump would agree on things, but they agreed on this. And I think, if nothing else, it may be worth a hard look and some consideration on your part. There is reason to what we're asking. On a somewhat more serious note, we would hope as an organization, the Saints, that our effort before you is in no way construed as being unfriendly to organized labor or to workers. Our home ballpark, CHS Field, opened in 2015. It's a public-private partnership into which the Saints organization has put approximately $12 million of our own money into the facility. It was built proudly and exclusively by union tradespeople. In a few weeks, we will complete a $2 million addition to the ballpark, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of the Saints and the role that the Saints and baseball have played in the development of the capital city, of our capital city. That investment was funded entirely by the Saints. As I mentioned, it's in the neighborhood of $2 million and also built by union tradespeople. We count numerous labor organizations as season ticket and group ticket customers. They're our friends, and we're happily going to welcome them all into the ballpark again in a few weeks. We're very proud of that partnership, and it was important for you all to know that as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Whaley, question I have, I can understand the part about the ball players, but you do pay your other staff in there. They are covered by the $15 minimum wage
correct.
In the city of St. Paul.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative, yes, that's correct.
I have no problem with it then. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions for this testifier? Representative Leppert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious how large the roster is for the Saints and the others in this league. How many players are on the roster?
Sure, Madam Chair. Representative, our roster consists of 22 players.
22 players, Madam Chair. So if it's a salary cap for the teams is $125,000, so
that's correct.
Figure out what the players make. It's $125,000 divided by 22.
Correct.
Right. So, Madam Chair.
Representative Leppert.
So the players are making like $4,900 for a season.
Is that would be, right? As I mentioned, I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Representative, mentioned before, the players are paid on a scale based on relative skill and experience. So the more experienced, more highly skilled players are paid slightly more. I would say on average now, and again, it's an average off the napkin, we're probably looking at somewhere in the $1,700 a month range that the players make.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Leppert.
And you spoke some of the kind of the parity that's present within the league. Is there among the teams and maybe you said this and I didn't pick it up. Is there a profit sharing agreement among the teams in the league? And is that is the amount of profit made, does that influence what the players are paid?
Madam Chair, Representative, there is not a revenue sharing agreement in place in the league. If I may, I'd also like to let the committee know that in addition to the salary that the players pay are paid, they do receive a housing allowance from the teams. And on the road, they receive a per diem of $20 per day that they're on the road. And they are provided with two meals when the team's playing at home. So they have a meal before the game and after the game. So there are, in addition to the salaried compensation received, there are other benefits that the team pays them as well. I should have mentioned that earlier.
Okay. Madam Chair. So it does make sense to me for this exemption to be there for players, because this isn't typically what we think of as an hourly sort of position. But the conversation does seem somewhat similar to me to some conversations are happening in college athletics. And I know there's been concern consistently about what minor league ball players are paid and things like that. So I just want to make that note as we're considering this legislation as well.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering about the other staff within the stadium here in St. Paul. Are they represented by a union? Are they part of a bargaining unit?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, not.
Good. Some work there to do. Just another comment. Mayor Carter should pick his allies more carefully, I think.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we have a stand-in author, but the point on the St. Paul minimum wage, I'm curious if and I know there's been quite a discussion over the years on this preemption idea. Is this necessary? Because if indeed it's in St. Paul, why are we doing it at the state if indeed we shouldn't be preempting at a state level the municipal issues?
Is that to me, Representative Vogel?
Unfortunately, you happen to be the author today.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know, but I'm thinking that with the testifier's testimony that St. Paul is willing to exempt that because the baseball players are pursuing their dream. So I guess that's why they brought it to the state level, Representative Vogel.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not against doing this. It's just that here we are basically preempting a city, because I don't know if anybody could answer if indeed the mayor of St. Paul would happen to magically change and all of a sudden they decided that this wasn't to apply anymore, would then the state law apply? And I think that's the detail I'm looking for. I don't know if author
and,
or maybe
to Representative Vogel, Representative Mahoney is on his way, so maybe if you want to ask that question when he gets here, would that be okay?
If you okay.
We do have another testifier, and we do have some other folks on the list. Is the question specifically to this testifier, or would you be willing to stick around for a minute?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Then we have Bill McCarthy, if you'd like to come up and. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Bill McCarthy. I'm president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, representing 1,000 unions who represent 300,000 union members across the state. We advocate for dignity, justice, and freedom for all working Minnesotans, whether they have a union card or not. I'm here today to speak in opposition to House File 2543. The state of Minnesota should not be in the practice of cutting any workers' wages and overtime pay. Whether you're attending bar or playing minor league baseball, all working people deserve to earn at least the minimum wage in the communities where they work. This bill would also set a troubling precedent. If passed, this legislation could open up floodgates to other employers requesting exemptions to our minimum wage and overtime laws. How would this legislature decide which employers deserve to be exempt from our laws? And how would you decide which workers don't deserve minimum wage or overtime pay? Mr. Chair, 2 weeks ago, this committee rightly voted to expand overtime pay for thousands of working Minnesotans. House File 2543 is inconsistent with that action. Minnesota's minimum wage and overtime laws are designed to raise standards for the lowest income workers. Every exemption to these laws, no matter how small it may seem at the time, weakens them. Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, committee members, you have a clear choice here today. If you support strong labor standards in our state, you will oppose this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to address this committee.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. So next on the list was Representative Detmer.
Yes, Madam Chair, and I think in Congress, it wasn't just passed the Save America's Pastime Act, and this is what you were talking about?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, I was referring to the, to that legislation.
Okay, my next question then is, do the players actually sign contracts? And I think you mentioned that there's a difference in pay with these contracts. And do some of these players then move up to major leagues?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, that's been the case in our history. The players, all players sign a uniform league-approved player contract that complies with federal law. As I mentioned, we operate in 10 states and a Canadian province. We're trying to find some standard that would make sense across that relatively wide swath. With regard to the second part of your question, we have had in our history in St. Paul, and I think that's shared by other teams in the league, in 21 seasons we've had 26 seasons we've had 21 players go from wearing Saints uniforms back into wearing Major League uniforms. During that same time period, 130 players from the Saints have gone from the Saints to into affiliated baseball organizations, which is where they really want to be. No kid grows up wanting to play for the St. Paul Saints. They want to play for the Minnesota Twins. Okay. And our league is a second chance league, if you will, independent, that gives players those opportunities.
And Madam Chair, so if you have a couple players that sign with the Twins, does the Saints get any money from the Twins for training them and carrying them through their training and then getting signed to a pro contract? Is there money that transferred to the Saints from the Twins?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, and we do that. If the player is purchased during the off season, I believe the fee is $1. And that's basically to defend the integrity of our player contracts, which the major league organizations do. During the off season, during the season, if a particularly skilled player is to be taken by a major league organization, I believe the price that's paid by the major league organization is $5,000, and that's a one-time contract sale, basically.
Yeah. And last one, Madam Chair, have you ever figured out maybe the amount of time, you know, they're on the bus, they travel, and so forth? I can see why the $15 an hour is an issue with the Saints. Have you ever figured out, if you did figure out contracts with some of that based in the contracts they signed to maybe provide a better wage for them?
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, you bring up a good point. I think that's part of the issue here and somewhat of the reason underlying the exemption. When a player is in pursuit of a dream of playing in Major League Baseball, the lines between work time and personal time can get blurry, as you might imagine. You know, we will go on, a week-long road trip to Winnipeg and Fargo. You know, under a conventional application of wage and hour, it's 24 hours a day for 7 days that would be compensable work time. I think that's part of the reason historically it's been understood that the players play under a salaried contract.
So to answer the second part of your question, we don't currently delineate in our contracts between, you know, time, because it really, as many baseball players as there have been in history, there are different methods of training. There is a letter that was in your materials that I would respectfully refer your attention to from a gentleman named Jason Verdugo, who is a former player of ours and is the current athletic director at Hamline University. Jason played football and baseball collegiately, was drafted into Major League Baseball, played independent baseball. He's seen all sides of the coin, if you will, of being a professional athlete. And I would, without belaboring the point, I'd refer your attention to his letter.
I just thought of another one, Madam Chair, and that are there any other minor league teams in the state of Minnesota, whether it's soccer, whether it's any type of sport that might be, they're under contract, they play, and so forth. Is there any other sports besides the Saints that this could apply to?
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, as far as I know, we are the only professional minor league baseball team in the state currently. There was a team in Duluth several years ago that was actually in our league. The only other teams, professional teams of which I'm currently aware, minor league teams, there is a women's professional hockey league team that plays in St. Paul, and there is a women's professional minor league soccer team that also plays in St. Paul. I'm not familiar with the workings of those two leagues, but those are the only ones of which I'm aware.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Zong.
Denver asked some of my questions already, but I guess I'll just also ask, do you have any of the players here to testify, and do they support this?
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, we do not have any players here today. I was hopeful of having Mr. Verdugo here, but he was not able to join us, so I did ask him on Monday if he would mind writing a letter that would track any testimony that he might give. So I think, obviously, he would confirm what he put in his letter that you have.
So, Representative Zhang, you'll have to put the baseball away and wait for the autograph another time.
What is the letter? I don't see the letter.
Representative Fabian, you had a question?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Whaley, what is the age range of players on your team or in your league?
Madam Chair, Representative, the age range is, I would say, anywhere from early 20s in the case of what we would refer to as a rookie with little or no professional experience. We have had players that are older than 30, but it's I would call it uncommon to have a player on your roster. Most of the players are somewhere in their mid-20s.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reason I asked is my kids all played hockey, of course, and probably the most popular sport in St. Paul next to who knows what. But growing up in Roseau, that's just what we did to a certain degree. And what I'm trying to put together here is the difference between them playing 2 years of junior hockey after high school and then going to the East Coast League and playing there. And I recognize the difference. I just wanted to get a sense for if there's any kids who are coming out of high school before they go to college or anyplace else and come and try out for the Saints or other similar teams.
Mr. Whaley?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. No, we have not signed high school players, nor do I think we would. The practical reality is most high school players that are of a significant degree of skill either are drafted by major league organizations or are go on to play collegiately many times under a scholarship. So that's more of the reality in the sport of baseball. We've not had an opportunity to sign a high school player. It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. But the skill differential between even the best high school player and the players in our league is fairly significant.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what you're saying is that most of them come to you after having played in college, whether it's at Hamline or the University of Minnesota or wherever.
Mr. Whaley.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative, they do come to us for the most part with some professional experience, and usually at the affiliated minor league level, they've played for a farm team for a major league organization. Our league does have a rule that requires us to have, I believe, 5 rookies, which are, they would be individuals of much lesser experience. That's to keep a developmental role, and in that case would be one where you might see players. In the past, we've employed and given opportunities to players from a lot of the Minnesota intercollegiate athletic schools, Gustavus, Hamlin, schools like that. And University of Minnesota as well, I should point out.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so is that why you would use, you used the term a second chance league earlier in your testimony. Is that kind of why? Because they've been someplace and didn't make it there in the pros and they've come down. And I don't mean to demean the Saints. I've been to a few of your games, by the way. This is a fun time. So is that why you call it a second chance league?
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. That's the reality for most of the players.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you. To the testifier, can you tell me, is there such a thing as a players association for these lower tier league players anywhere in the United States or a province of Canada?
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, I know there's not in baseball, and I don't believe there is in any other sport. My recollection might be that hockey players that play professionally, there may be a union at the minor league level that play under collective bargaining agreement, but that's not the case in baseball.
To anyone out there, just trying to think this through a little bit. Does anyone know if the AFL-CIO represents any athletic teams of this sort?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not aware that any of minor league are represented by unions. No.
Again, how many, Madam Chair, how many players are we talking in and out of the St. Paul team any given time?
Mr. Whaley?
Madam Chair, Representative, the roster is 22 players.
22 players, okay. So it looks like an organizing drive.
Representative Vogel, would you like to ask your question of the author now that he's
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. Thank you. To the author. Is there a need for this? And the reason I ask is we've had quite a spirited debate over the last few years on local preemption. It sounds as if the city of St. Paul has already allowed this. Is there really a need to do this at the state level?
Representative Mahoney.
As I understand it, if they follow the minimum wage on the state level, they exceed their cap. And as such, they become problematic for their league. Beyond that, I'm going to end my answer there. So is there a need? Ask this testifier.
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we did check in with Senate counsel on this question to see if there was some other way to achieve what we were trying to do short of an exemption, and were advised that that was not the case. So the issue we run into is that there are 3 different sets of laws that potentially can apply to an employment situation, the federal, state, and the local. And we, in order to cover our bases, so to speak, we feel it's necessary to address the issue at each of those levels. It's a bit of a cumbersome process, but we don't see a way around it.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, then, and I know this may not occur a lot of times, but I suppose it's always possible that the team could play in another city in Minnesota. Does each city then have to do this same thing to stay consistent with what we're doing here? In other words, the city of St. Paul sets one thing and the state sets another. Let's say you happen to have a game in Minneapolis. I'm not sure who might answer that, but how would we approach all of this? So once we do this, it's safe to know that you can operate the way you should be able to operate.
Mr. Whaley? Was that a question?
This bill, as I understand the bill, having read it a couple of times, applies to state law. It does not apply to the city law. So if they were to play in Minneapolis or St. Paul, in St. Paul they have an exemption. In Minneapolis, I do not believe they have an exemption. So the St. Paul Saints are safe from contamination. I mean, they would not be playing over in Minneapolis.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think it clears up the uncertainty there is with all of these things, because it is difficult for employers now to face a number of different laws in a number of different cities and who controls. So that was, thank you.
And Representative Dittmer, you had another question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I mentioned this before. Does the Save America Pastime Act apply to the Saints?
Representative, or Mr. Whaley?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we believe it does. It's federal law, and as such, we would be concerned about a potential claim if that law were not in place. So, my understanding would be that it does apply to us, and that is in large part, again, I mentioned our teams operate in 10 states in a Canadian province. We're searching to find some standard that we can comply with that is understandable and fair across the entire 12 teams, and we have settled on the federal standard.
And kind of piggyback on Representative Vogel's question, this was brought on by St. Paul, their adoption of the minimum wage. Is there any way that the city can take care of that? Does it have to come to the legislature? And I don't know, Mr. Weeks could fall into that. I don't know.
Chair Kegel, Representative Dittmer, the state law applies regardless if the city has granted an exemption, because in generally speaking, the state law overrides the local law. Yeah. So if the problem for the Saints is that they can't meet their salary cap and pay state minimum wage, then they either need an exemption or they're not complying with the law.
And Madam Chair, is that salary cap, you might have mentioned that already, is that set by the Saints or is it set by the league? Or I think you already mentioned that, but is there a chance of that salary cap being raised so that it would fit in within the $15 minimum wage?
Mr. Whaley?
Madam Chair, Representative, we did do that a year ago. We adjusted our salary cap to accommodate the federal law. And so it resulted practically in the less experienced, less skilled players receiving a raise of approximately $300 a month by complying with the federal law. And that's federal minimum wage would go up. I'm certain we would adjust our cap accordingly to accommodate that, so that we would maintain compliance with the federal standard.
And this will be my last question.
Representative
Dittmer. I did play baseball and whatever, but do you have any players that might be making $15 an hour based on everything they do with the Saints? Is there any of them that are making that amount?
Mr. Whaley?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have specific information. Our contracts aren't set for 2019 yet, but in the past, I would say, it's a difficult question. Yes, I would say that we have had players in the past that probably have made that, some of the more experienced or star players. We've had players like, in our history, Jack Morris and Daryl Strawberry, who I know received higher wages. But the issue is the hours put in. And so to say that, and that's the difficult part, because Daryl Strawberry in his prime might put in less time than a rookie that's coming out of Hamlin to hone his skills. So that's part of the nature of the problem is the hours that a player either feels he's required to put in or needs to put in or is required to put in varies. There are as many of those as there are players.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Whaley, I mentioned, you know, one of my sons played in the East Coast Hockey League and was compensated, but included in that was their housing. What is your housing allowance worth per month?
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, our rules in our league are as such. Each team is allowed to provide free housing, in other words, housing that the team pays for up to five players. The remainder of the roster, the maximum that they will pay in rent would be $300 per month. And so part of an issue with answering your question is knowing what the rents are. I'm certain in a given season we'd be able to calculate that particular number, but I asked our business manager yesterday roughly what we pay for apartments, and my understanding is we pay about $2,500 a month for a two-bedroom apartment. So, you know, back-of-the-napkin math tells me that that's probably a benefit in the neighborhood of $300 to $400 per month per player that they're receiving in a housing benefit.
Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that would be in addition to their salary, obviously. So I want to be clear on, you've mentioned Mayor Carter. To be clear, do you have an exemption from the City of St. Paul that was passed as a resolution?
Mr. Whaley?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Thank you. And so what you're asking for here is an exemption from the state law that was passed in 13 or 14? When was the update to Representative Mahoney when you guys were in control? Did you do that in 13 or 14, the new state minimum wage law?
I barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
I know what I had, piece of toast.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to be clear, you're asking for that exemption from the state because you already have it from the City of St. Paul.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Thank you. Okay. I'm clear.
Well, that was the end of the list. Is there any other questions?
Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call, please.
All right. Roll call being is there any other questions, any other testifiers? All right. Oh, Representative Mahoney, would you like to wrap or have any closing statements?
Do I have any last words?
Yes.
Appropriately said. You know, the city and the state combined to invest $50 million for a ball team. For a stadium that would house a ball team that brings 8,000 people to downtown. My understanding, and I have no reason to disbelieve that they will be forced out of their league if something like this doesn't pass. That's on us. And if we play politics with this, it's a sad day for St. Paul, but that is what it is. So vote the way that you believe you should. I won't put any pressure on anybody to vote any other way than what they believe they should.
Thank you. All right. Well, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Sandin.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Pass.
Representative Brand.
Yes.
Representative Claflin. Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Eckler?
Yes.
Representative Fabian?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Lippert?
Yes.
Representative Mayhew?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Purcell?
Yes.
Representative Herman? Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I'll go yes.
Detmer changes to yes. With the 12-2, so the ayes have it, motion, or the
motion prevails.
Motion passes. The bill is re-referred to waiver needs, and you're on your way.
Madam Chair.
Representative Chair Sundin.
I'd like to thank the committee for all their diligence this year. This should be the final session. If there's a need, we will recall the committee. I don't anticipate anything at this point. I'd like to thank Mr. Kennedy, Mr. Weeks, Travis Reese, Andy Jorgensen, and Amanda LePage. Okay, thank you very much for your work in serving the committee. And what was the vote on that last measure? 12-2. To the two dissenting votes, just remember, there's no crying in baseball.
And with that, we are adjourned.